of your favorite person. So they have an opportunity to be really creative. And some of the entries we get are just wonderful. And by the way, we don't show anything about the children, you know, for privacy.
On that note, Sheila Lowe, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you, John.
This is John Crumshoe with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report. On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission.
90.7 FM, KPFK, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esti Chandler. The Arabic word Nakba translates to catastrophe or disaster. In the context of Palestine and Israel, it often refers to the events surrounding the May 15, 1948 declaration of the State of Israel in historic Palestine and the many months spent ethnically cleansing or pushing out the majority of the Palestinian population to create a Jewish majority in the parts of Palestine to become the State of Israel, as suggested by the United Nations partition plan. But for Palestinians, the Nakba, the catastrophe, is not just a historical event or a six-month span of time. Instead, it is the continuing experience of ongoing ethnic cleansing, occupation, apartheid, and their ongoing struggle for self-determination, the right of return, and what Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, B'Tselem, American diplomats, and other experts have long since shown evidence proving is a genocide in Gaza. The Nakba signifies the loss of Palestinian homeland and the attempt to destroy Palestinian society, culture, and history. Here in the U.S., where our government is the number one supporter of that continued destruction and the current genocide, the ongoing Nakba has for decades included attempts to harass and demonize Palestinians, to redefine the word anti-Semitism, to include criticism of Israel, including by enshrining into U.S. law the IHRA, or International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, definition of anti-Semitism, which the president has adopted in an executive order, and to criminalize boycotts of, divestment from, and calls for sanctions against the Israeli government, Israeli goods and services, and companies that materially support Israeli aggression and expansion. In 2025, that includes the Heritage Foundation's Project Esther. You heard that correctly. Project Esther is a plan put out by the same organization that produced Project 2025, and in many ways, Project Esther reads like an addendum to Project 2025. While it purports to be a national campaign to combat anti-Semitism, reading it shows it to be a blueprint for a 12 to 24 month plan to dismantle the Palestinian liberation movement in this country using the weaponization of anti-Semitism and anti-Palestinian racism fueled by longtime efforts more recently put on steroids to dehumanize Palestinians. I am enormously grateful to be joined today by someone who has spent more time analyzing Project Esther than anyone I know, Beth Miller. Beth Miller is the political director of JVP Action, the political and advocacy sibling organization of Jewish Voice for Peace. Beth has worked in the Palestinian Solidarity Movement since 2011, including serving as the U.S. Advocacy Officer for Defense for Children International Palestine, where she co-led the national No Way to Treat a Child campaign. She holds an MA in Human Rights Law from the SOAS University of London. And it is always my great pleasure to welcome Beth Miller back to Middle East in Focus.
Hi, Esti. Thank you so much for having me on. So honored to be here.
We're so lucky to have you. And as always, I want to disclose that I currently serve as the board chair of JVP Action. Beth, we have a lot to cover, so I'm going to jump right in. When someone reads Project Esther, one of the first things that comes to mind is this very disingenuous attempt by the current administration to frame their assault on civil rights protections, institutions of higher learning, and civil society organizations as being an attempt to, quote, root out anti-Semitism specifically on college campuses, end quote. So please tell us, what is it important for the public to know about the Heritage Foundation and Project Esther, which claims to be both a campaign and a national task force to combat what it calls the scourge of anti-Semitism in the United States? And what are the actual goals of the project?
Of course. I'm so glad that we're talking about this today and grateful again to you, Esty, for inviting me on and for creating the space to talk about this. I think, you know, you phrased it well when you said that Project Esther should essentially be thought of as an addendum to Project 2025. I think that is the most important thing for us to all understand about it. This is something that an ultra-conservative, Trump-aligned think tank, the Heritage Foundation, which, to be clear, has a vision for the future that is a white nationalist, capitalist vision for the future where most of our communities are destroyed and dismantled. That is the group that created Project Esther. And what they did was they essentially saw that pretending to care about Jewish safety, pretending to want to fight anti-Semitism was a new Trojan horse for them to be able to actually try to pursue their white nationalist, ultra-conservative, and frankly, fascist agenda that we're seeing. That is the most important thing for people to understand. At its core, this has absolutely nothing to do with keeping Jewish people safe. It is entirely about destroying a growing social justice movement to end a genocide in Gaza. And it is entirely about doing that in a way that will sharpen the tools that can then be used against every other social justice movement in this country. Those are the primary goals that we're seeing with Project Esther and what the Heritage Foundation has created here.
And the tools Project Esther seems to be using are the conflation of anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism to weaponize anti-Semitism, and the demonization of Palestinians to dehumanize them and provoke anti-Palestinian racism. Project Esther exclusively focuses on anti-Semitism on the left, ignoring anti-Semitic harassment and violence from the right, which has drawn criticism from many Jewish organizations. Can you further discuss the tools being employed by and the targets of Project Esther?
Yes, absolutely. So Project Esther, you know, I think it's actually a rare opportunity for a social justice movement when its opposition writes and publishes their plan to try to destroy your movement, right? And when that happens, it's really important that we read it, we take it seriously and we understand it. Because when an ultra-conservative think tank writes down their plans to try to destroy a movement, we should understand what their plans are so that we can fight back accordingly. I think that, you know, I'll say kind of some of the strategies that Project Esther lays out. And I want to say that before I dive in, it's really important for us to understand that that for years, many of the seeds of these tactics have already been happening, right? A lot of what's been happening has been embraced in a bipartisan way at the state and the federal level by, like I said, in a bipartisan fashion to try to kind of clamp down on Palestinian rights organizing in this country. But what's happened is that as the far right has gained control, and with the re-election of Trump in the second term where we're seeing authoritarianism and fascism crank up at a new speed and a new dial, these tactics have been escalated and sped up incredibly swiftly and in a really terrifying manner, and a way that makes and exposes very clearly that these tactics were always rooted in a far right ideology. So some of the strategies that are kind of laid out and named in Project Esther include lawfare and criminalization of people in the movement. That's one. By lawfare, what I mean is the use of law to basically the misuse of law to attack silence and censor the movement and individuals and organizations in the movement. Another is basically trying to attack movement infrastructure and funding sources for the movement. So, you know, like you said, I work for Jewish Voice for Peace Action, which is the sibling organization of Jewish Voice for Peace. Jewish Voice for Peace, JVP, is one of three organizations that are named in Project Esther. So they're very specifically talking about which movement orgs they're going to try to destroy the infrastructure of. They talk about specifically trying to silence the campus movement, which is unsurprising because, like with so many anti-war and social justice movements, the front lines exist on our college campuses. That's the way it's been for so long. And so they see that thriving movement as a particular threat. To employ narrative attacks, essentially lying about and smearing individuals who are in the movement. And then I think importantly to name, they also talk specifically in Project Esther about trying to sow mistrust and discord within the movement. They talk about, for example, trying to make it so that movement organizations won't trust one another or work with one another. And I think that when we step back and we look at these strategies, we can see that this is very clearly a McCarthyite approach, right? We see echoes of the McCarthy era, of the Palmer raids era, of COINTELPRO. These are tried and true tactics of state power to try to silence social justice and progressive movements. And we're seeing that Heritage Foundation has kind of compiled them in this way to try to create a blueprint for a public-private partnership to take down the movement. And perhaps later we can talk about some examples of what that's already looking like.
Absolutely. So what I hear you saying is that Project Esther has laid out a broad program of surveillance, propaganda, deportation, criminalization. And we don't have to just surmise that after deploying these authoritarian tactics on defenders of Palestinian liberation, this administration will pivot to target other movements of social justice with similar campaigns of violence, as the Trump administration has already engaged in this kind of extremely oppressive governance. So can you talk about some of those governmental tools via existing laws that Project Esther plans to exploit, including counterterrorism, immigration, racketeering, and foreign agent registration laws?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the ones that are most present and visible right now are counterterrorism and immigration. And, you know, the most prominent example of this, of course, is the unlawful abduction and detention of students on college campuses, of non-citizen, of international students, Mahmoud Khalil being the first person who was abducted from the lobby of his apartment building and is still currently being held in a Louisiana ICE detention facility. He was abducted in Manhattan and swiftly brought by government agents out of state, thousands of miles from his legal team. His wife, who was at the time pregnant, has since given birth to their first child while he was held in ICE detention. And he's now still in Louisiana. And then, of course, other students as well, like Rumaytha Oftürk, who was abducted from the street by masked, unmarked government agents, like Badr Khansouri, who was also arrested, like Mohsen Makhdawi, the list goes on. And luckily and thankfully for our movement lawyers from their incredible work, many of those students are starting to be released on bail. Mahmoud continues to be held. And this is a perfect example of where we see these kind of weaponization of, to be clear, what are already incredibly racist and terrible systems of law, like our immigration system, counterterrorism legal system, which are already overly broad and built to be able to kind of wrongfully deport people and take away people's rights. But we're seeing them be increasingly weaponized in new ways. So, for example, the government is claiming that Mahmoud Khalil, who is a Palestinian who was organizing on his college campus and leading negotiations with the Columbia administration, saying that he's somehow a threat to Jewish safety in this country and somehow specifically a threat to U.S. foreign policy interests, and that for that reason they should be able to deport him. That is, one, absurd, right? The idea that this incredible organizer and student who was organizing against war and genocide is somehow a threat to Jewish safety is absolutely absurd. And again, we're seeing just like the way that this administration is essentially using college campuses as a testing ground for new extremes of their fascist agenda. What they're doing is they're saying, how far can we go? Let's see what happens if we literally abduct people from the street, but we say that it's about fighting anti-Semitism. Let's see how far we can get here. And that's part of the reason that it's so important for all of us to be incredibly loud and vocal immediately in pushing back against this, because early pushback and fighting back against these things is incredibly important for trying to break the momentum and the stride of an increasingly fascist regime that we see in the Trump administration. So we're seeing those kinds of things take place a lot. And we are also seeing the way that they are tied, like you said before, Esty, like I mentioned in my earlier answer as well, that these things are directly, not even subtly, then also being tied to the defunding of high institutes of higher education, right? Trump is saying, well, look at, you know, we have to protect Jewish students, and therefore we're going to take away billions of dollars in your research, your medical grant research, for example, right? It's absolutely absurd. And the fact that they are doing this all under the guise of fighting anti-Semitism is first and foremost bad for Palestinians that they are demonizing, bad for international students that they are trying to deport. But we should be clear, it is also incredibly dangerous for Jewish students and Jewish communities that are being used as a kind of pawn in this broader authoritarian agenda.
Right. And maybe it's lucky that they're being so absurd as to take medical funding to, so people realize how absurd and disconnected it is. Right. You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK. I'm Esty Chandler. Very happy to be joined today by Beth Miller, political director of Jewish Voice for Peace Action, discussing the far-right wing Heritage Foundation's Project Esther, a document which outlines a national strategy for quickly dismantling the Palestine Solidarity Movement in the United States by deploying false claims of anti-Semitism, anti-Palestinian racism, and terrorism against the movement, and ultimately to weaken higher education, due process, checks and balances, freedom of speech, and freedom of the press. Beth, Project Esther claims that the Palestinian Liberation Movement benefits from support and training from America's enemies and is supported by activists and funders dedicated to destroying capitalism and democracy, though one could actually legitimately argue that the former is in large part destroying the latter. But I digress. Can you please discuss some of the people and organizations that the Heritage Foundation and Project Esther claim to be the leaders and organizers and supporters of the Palestinian Liberation Movement and they're going after?
So essentially kind of what Project Esther is claiming they're saying. Yeah. So, you know, Project Esther, it is, like you said, I mean, I think this is true of fascists in general. On the one hand, they should be taken and understood to be a threat to every single one of our communities that we need to put all of our effort into fighting back against. And at the same time, they are absurd. And they act in these absurdist ways that are so, they just expose so clearly what it is that they are really trying to do. And I think in many ways, many more people are waking up to what is happening because of the level of absurdity of what is going on. Project Esther, for example, was written and created and kind of imagined by Christian nationalists, not Jewish people, but by Christian nationalists, who some of whom support Israel because they believe it will bring on the end times, right? Christian nationalists and Christian Zionists who basically want the rapture to happen when Jews will go to hell. Like they are themselves incredibly anti-Semitic. They're also written and created by people who support the Trump regime, which has Elon Musk out there giving Nazi salutes on the national stage. This is blatant Nazi anti-Semitism that we are seeing. And to have this same group and coalition of people then creating this document that is trying to demonize a liberation movement is at the same time terrifying and the source of so much state violence, and also absolutely absurd. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing is that the Project Esther essentially labels the entire Palestinian rights movement in the U.S. as what they call the Hamas support network. They are trying to claim that that is what the liberation movement in the United States is. And they talk about specific organizations as being Hamas supporting organizations. This is, of course, rooted in nothing. There is no evidence. There is no reality. It is entirely false. It is an example of what they say they want to do, which is narrative attack, right? They are, the project itself is an example of a smear and a lie against the Palestinian rights movement in the United States. In reality, what the Palestinian rights movement in the United States is one of the biggest, strongest progressive left movements and anti-war movements that this country has seen in years. And if we look at the last year and a half in particular, the movement to stop the Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza is the largest anti-war mobilization that this country has seen, certainly since the Iraq War, maybe even since the Vietnam War. And so the fact that this progressive movement has grown so strong, that's why the far right is coming for it, because they understand that the Palestinian rights movement is a linchpin. It is a core part of the broader progressive left in this country. And it should be noted that they, if you read Project Esther, which as much as it's horrible, I really recommend everyone read Project Esther. It's very, very clear that they are trying to do and frame this in a way that allows them to get at what, like, the broader kind of culture wars they are trying to fight. They are going after DEI. They're going after the LGBTQ plus movement. They're going after climate justice. There's a reason that in Project Esther, they don't just say that we support Palestinian rights. They say we're anti-Israel and anti-American, right? Anti-Western. This is what they are trying to create and build, is a vision for the world where the U.S. is a white Christian superpower. And they see the Palestinian rights movement and the broad diversity and progressive agenda within and that it's connected to as a threat to that vision. And that's why they're trying to smear it and go after it in that way.
So while Project Esther primarily targets Palestinians, Arabs, Muslims, it also takes direct aim at anti-Zionist Jews seeking to marginalize and silence them, including, as you said, Jewish Voice for Peace. Can you just tell us a few ways in which Project Esther actually harms Jewish people as it claims to be fighting anti-Semitism?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I mean, the Project Esther is the written down kind of epitome of what the far right has been doing for a very long time, which is essentially trying to use Jews and Jewish communities as like a wedge point, right? That, again, pretending to care about anti-Semitism while in fact trying to, what it does is it separates out Jewish people from everyone else. And to be clear, many Jewish institutions in this country are part and parcel of that and are deeply complicit in it. And the kind of Christian nationalist and white nationalist movement has seen that there is an opportunity here because there has been a conflation of criticism of the Israeli government with anti-Semitism for decades. And it has gotten to the point where the far right now says, okay, great. If we say that if you criticize Israel, you're un-American and you are anti-Semitic and you're a terrorist, then it will give us the basis we need to strip you of all of your rights. And in doing so, we can then go after every other community. And I think that we have seen enough from history to understand that fascism, authoritarianism, and kind of isolating out Jewish communities in this way, it's bad for Jewish people. It does not ever go well. It's bad for everyone, and that includes Jewish people. It has never gone well for us. It never will. And that's because there is no future of Jewish safety that is not connected to the safety and liberation of every other marginalized and vulnerable community. It just doesn't exist. And that is directly tied, of course, to why the state of Israel itself does not provide Jewish people with safety. Higher walls, isolation, militarization, and oppression of other people does not provide people with Jewish safety. And peeling the fight against anti-Semitism away from the fight against every other form of white nationalism does not provide Jewish people with safety. And so I think that, you know, we can see this very clearly again in this kind of completely exposed way where Project Esther is written by anti-Semites and Christian nationalists who are pretending to care about Jewish safety in order to pursue a future in which Jews and every other community are suffering.
Right. So considering the authors, as you say, it's not surprising that the arguments in Project Esther also move into attacks on progressive study and fields from critical theories and ethnic studies and women's studies to initiatives like Black Lives Matter, migrant justice, and diversity, equity, and inclusion, which are characterized in Project Esther as anti-American ideology. So perhaps my most important question, Beth, how should the public engage with, protest and fight against the goals of Project Esther?
Yeah. The most important thing to do, I think, is to continue to be loudly and proudly involved in Palestinian rights organizing. We have to resist what they are trying to create, which is an environment of fear that will censor and silence and weaken this movement. And so for us to continue to show that this movement is unwilling to relent to that culture of fear, especially as the Israeli government only intensifies and worsens its starvation and slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza, that is the most important thing. And strengthening those ties, that movement and our organizing is the best way to combat Project Esther.
And as you say, everybody should hop on the internet and read Project Esther. Beth, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your weekend to join us and so clearly lay out the terrifying aspects and the absurdity of Project Esther and for giving us ideas about how we fight it.
Thank you so much for having me on, Esty. I appreciate it.
Today, the New York Times published an expose on Project Esther, which makes clear that, quote, even before President Trump was reelected, the Heritage Foundation, best known for Project 2025, set out to destroy pro-Palestinian activism in the United States, end quote. Led by a team of almost exclusively non-Jews, by last summer, as public opinion was quickly shifting in favor of the Palestinian cause, the Heritage Foundation had finalized their national plan, which aimed to con the public into perceiving the U.S. pro-Palestinian movement as part of a global network supporting Hamas, which, quote, poses a threat not simply to American Jewry, but to America itself, end quote. But do not be fooled. An open letter from 36 former leaders of major Jewish establishment groups, not left-wing-leaning activist groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, but Jewish establishment groups, including a former national chair of the Anti-Defamation League, recently warned that a range of actors are using a purported concern about Jewish safety as a cudgel to weaken higher education, due process, checks and balances, freedom of speech, and the press. The letter calls on Jewish leaders and institutions to resist the exploitation of Jewish fears and publicly join with other organizations that are battling to preserve the guardrails of democracy. And we should all be part of that. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Beth Miller, the political director of JVP Action, the political and advocacy sibling organization of Jewish Voice for Peace. I also want to thank Ozzy Flamenco for his production support today. Our theme song is the overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for your continued support of KPFK and, of course, for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.
The government has failed us. You can't deny that. Anytime you live in the 20th century and you walking around here singing, "We shall overcome," the government has failed.
You're invited to join us this Monday, May 19th, 2025 on KPFK from 1 to 3 p.m. for the Malcolm X Centennial, marking the 100th anniversary of his birth. KPFK will honor Malcolm X's legacy as a freedom fighter, visionary, and a brilliant voice for justice with recordings of Malcolm X himself from the Pacifica Radio Archives. That's Monday, May 19th, the Malcolm X Centennial Celebration on KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, from 1 to 3 p.m.